Jesus,
Love,
I am overjoyed to meet you face to face. You've been getting quite a name all around the place. Healing cripples, raising from the dead. Now I understand you're God. At least that's what you've said. So, you are the Christ. You're the great Jesus Christ. Prove to me that you're divine. Change my water into wine. That's all you need to. Then I'll know it's all true. Come on, King of the Jews. Jesus, you just won't believe the hit you've made around here.
March 3rd, 2011, Washington, D.C., planet Earth, third planet from the sun. I thought that was kind of cute in reference to our commander-in-chief, who many believe to be the Messiah, the anointed one, the one who has come to set us free. The man God sent to forgive us of all our sins, Barack Hussein Obama. Yeah. Okay. Let's get this show started, shall we? I got to tell you what, today has been a very interesting day. Barack Obama, now we have ICE agents who are working on the border and then across the border, and they're doing a very, you know, very dangerous and very difficult job over there. And these are Americans working for their country. Border Patrol, they're allowed to carry weapons, and one would think that ICE agents should have that privilege as well, especially those working on the border and in harm's way. But President Obama has signaled yet another appeasement of another country. I wouldn't call Mexico a foreign country. I just can't. It's just such a close proximity. It's like I didn't call Canada for a foreign country as well either. But one would think that they would have that privilege. That privilege would be afforded to them, but I guess not, because Obama probably simply, well, he doesn't, I don't know, maybe he doesn't want to offend anybody, you know, the president of Mexico and Mexicans in general by providing guns for Americans to protect themselves against drug dealers and the like, just because, you know, those drug dealers may happen or just so happen to be Mexican. He doesn't want to offend anybody. So once again, it's my opinion that we have political correctness gone amok. Before I finish up yesterday's part two of yesterday's show, I'd like to share with you a conversation I had with an associate yesterday. We were talking about the government, and we were talking about the government being in dire straits financially. A lot of people don't really believe it. Anyway, I said to this individual that when I have these kinds of conversations, I like to throw out the facts. I mean, people will talk and give their opinions, and they'll talk about how they feel about a subject or certain subject matter. But, and that's all well and good, but I like facts. And numbers don't lie. Facts don't lie. And I was speaking to this person, and She is a tax attorney. And, of course, I have need of a tax attorney from time to time. And I mentioned to her that that Barack Obama had run up more debt in the 2 years he's been in office than all other previous presidents combined. And, of course, her retort was expected, and that was, well, the previous president ran up a lot of debt, too. He was the one who got us in this mess. We were already in trouble to begin with, blah, 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 blah. After a few seconds of hearing that, all I heard was wah, 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 wah. I really didn't tune her out after that because I had my response already prepared. I stated that, okay, well, let's just, for argument's sake, agree that the country was in poor health financially when Barack Obama took office, and that something needed to be done to bring us out. Well, what happens when you're in poor financial health? Do you spend more money? If you have $50 in your wallet and you need to feed the kids, and that's all you have, there's no more money, do you spend all of that money on something else? Do you spend it on like one dish? Do you go out to Red Lobster with that 50, or do you kind of spread it around a little bit? Well, I didn't say that to her. She said that. I said, we're in debt. Why spend more money than we're taking in? And the government is spending more money than it takes in by a wide margin and then borrowing to cover up the deficit, thus putting us deeper and deeper into the hole every single day. Her response was, and I couldn't make this up, folks, her response to me was, well, you've got to spend money to make money. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You've got to spend money to make money. So at this point, I have judged this person to be completely in the tank for President Obama. Clearly, she's not. I mean, this is a person whose job is numbers. Her job is, well, she was a former IRS agent, and she handled taxes for companies, corporations. She's a corporate tax lawyer. And so when I spoke to her about this issue of running up more debt than we can afford, spending more money than we take in, I assumed that she would understand and perhaps even agree. That's not the case. And then she hit me with the, but you're black. You know, one would think that you would support a black president, being black yourself. At that point, I did what I just did. I couldn't help but sigh in exasperation and resignation. I followed up that with, well, you know, Papa and Baby Doc Duvalier, the Haitian dictators, they're black. They don't come no blacker. Should I have supported them as well? Idi Amin was black as the Ace of Spades. Should I have supported him? Louis Farrakhan, black. Should I support him because he's black? Drug dealers, murderers. Not that I am equating or comparing Barack Obama to any of those folks, but Do we simply, is it that simple? Support a man whose policies you don't agree with. Well, you just put that aside and you support him because he's black and you're black too. Yeah, at this point, I judge this person to be a complete moron. I was willing to give her the benefit of the doubt with that whole thing about you got to spend money to make money. Because clearly that didn't work, because we spent nearly $1 trillion in stimulus, and so far we haven't made any money. Okay, so the story I just told is true. The names, well, I didn't give any names, so they weren't changed to protect any innocent folks. But I meet with this all the time. Here I am, a black man. I do not consider myself an African American. I'm just plain old American, and I'm black. And I'm not going to go with the African-American thing because, you know, I've been here 49 years. And how embarrassing is it to go from being Negro to black to African-American all in the span of my lifetime? How the hell does that happen? So I am just simply not going with that. I'm just going to stick with just being black and more importantly, being American. So imagine my plight as a black man being a conservative and not agreeing with Barack Obama every day. I'm hit from all sides. He's the first black president. He's the first this. He's the first. Oh, my God. Does that matter? He's not a very good president. He's awful. But this is the mindset of black folks out there. Not all, certainly not, but more than is necessary. Just go along. Drink the Kool-Aid. Support him. Support whatever he does simply because he's black. It's insane. It's the sheep mentality. And I hear it, well, nearly every single day that I, well, every time I mention that I'm conservative and I listen to Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, watch Fox News, Fox lies. Well, what do they lie about?
They just lie. They lie about everything.
What do they lie about specifically?
They just lie. They lied about blah, 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 blah.
It's all a big old just jumble of noise after that because I'm off somewhere else doing something else even though I'm standing right in front of the folks. So now that I got that story out of the way, because I'll have the same story again tomorrow, because I'm black, I have no choice but to support a black president who is destroying this great country. So, to finish up yesterday's show, we were talking about, unfortunately, how America will collapse by 2025, and I laid out, or I started out laying out four scenarios that could spell the end of the United States as we know it, and in the very near future. And we left off with the economic decline and our present situation, and we finished up with the oil shock. And at the end of yesterday's show, we talked about the America's waning economic power as a result of its dependency on foreign oil. Yeah. It wasn't It's very sad. It's a very sad scenario. You see, because the United States remains so dependent upon foreign oil that just a few adverse developments in the global energy market leading up to 2025 will spark what is called an oil shock. And by comparison, it will make the 1973 oil shock, when prices quadrupled in just a few months, look like it was nothing. So when we left off yesterday, we talked about that. It was very important. Now, we're concerned that the U.S. Navy might no longer be able to protect the oil tankers traveling from the Persian Gulf to fuel East Asia and other parts of the world. So when we left off there, we're going to start off and finish this up with military misadventure being number 4 on the list of scenarios that will collapse and bring destruction about the great United States of America, my country, yours. Counterintuitively, is as our power wanes, or as empires' power wanes, empires often plunge into ill-advised military misadventures. And this phenomenon is known among historians such as myself as micromilitarism. Yes, micromilitarism. We historians coined that phrase. Well, not me personally. And micromilitarism seems to involve psychological compensatory efforts to save off the sting of retreat or defeat by occupying new territories. However, briefly and catastrophically. Now, those types of operations, irrational even from an imperial point of view, often yield hemorrhaging expenditures or humiliating defeats that only accelerate the loss of power. And we can, when we talk about all this, think about Europe. Think about Rome, classic example, the Roman Empire. They're the classic example that I'd like to throw out there right now. Embattled empires through the ages suffer an arrogance that drives them to plunge even deeper into military misadventures until defeat becomes a debacle. For example, in 413 BCE, a weakened Athens sent 200 ships to be slaughtered in Sicily. In 1921, a dying imperial Spain dispatched 20,000 soldiers to be massacred by guerrillas in Morocco. In 1956, a fading British Empire destroyed its prestige by attacking Suez. And in 2001 and 2003, the U.S. occupied Afghanistan and invaded Iraq. Get the picture? With the hubris that marks empires over the millennia, Washington has increased its troops in Afghanistan to 100,000, expanded the war into Pakistan, and extended its commitment to 2014 and beyond, courting disaster, large and small, in this guerrilla-infested, nuclear-armed graveyard of empires. Tesla writes in the chat room, will radically if HBO is HBO VHO is reelected in 2012, he will use that as a mandate to radically transform our government, since he can't run again and be subject to votes of the folks. Yes, the combination, and that's something that I'm very, very concerned about, Tesler, because, like as you so eloquently put it, if Barack Obama is reelected, all bets are off at that point. He can't run again. So, being a lame duck, well, it used to be, well, the guy's just not dangerous anymore because he's a lame duck. No, he'll be gone. But in this case, being a lame duck is very, very dangerous indeed. So let's get back to the scenario. Military misadventure scenario 2014. So irrational and unpredictable is micromilitarism that seemingly fanciful scenarios are soon outdone by actual events. Think about time. Think about the times in British history, and in, once again, my favorite example, the Roman Empire, where they extended themselves, overextended themselves on four continents. It only hastened the demise of the great Roman Empire by military or micromilitarism. With the U.S. military stretched thin from Somalia to the Philippines and tensions rising in Israel, Iran, and Korea, possible combinations for a disastrous military crisis abroad are multifold. And we have a Secretary of Defense who has publicly stated that his goal is to shrink the military, each individual service, by at least 100,000, at the very least. Now, the United States Marine Corps, my service, operated in times of peace, averaging around 196,000 Marines in total. As of today, we're right up around 333,000, nearly 400,000. So shrinking the Marine Corps, well, that won't be much of a problem because it's always been a small, light, small force. But what about the United States Army, Air Force, Navy? Shrinking our military service, number one, will put an awful lot of folks out of work, and number two, will weaken us militarily. One thinks that I think that liberals often think that the reason why we haven't been attacked here on American soil is because we're such great folks. No, it's because we have what is considered to be around the world the finest military force known to man. And that kind of keeps people off your back for a while. You know, they'll talk tough. But they don't want to get into a scrap. So think about this. Picture it. It's mid summer 2014, and a drawn down US garrison is embattled. And it's fighting in an embattled Kandahar in southern Afghanistan. And suddenly, unexpectedly, it's overrun by Taliban guerrillas. And while U.S. aircraft are grounded by a blinding sandstorm, heavy losses are taken. And in retaliation, an embarrassed American war commander loses B-1 bombers and F-16 fighters. He dispatches what B-1 bombers and F-16s he has left to demolish whole neighborhoods, towns that are believed to be under Taliban control. While an AC-130U Spooky, or Puff the Magic Dragon as we call him, gunship rakes the rubble with devastating cannon fire. Let me describe, I love this description. Let me describe to you the first time I saw Puff the Magic Dragon, or Spooky, or its technical name, the AC-130U. A demonstration was provided for a young second lieutenant and his group of lieutenants at the basic school at Quantico. We saw this huge AC-130 camouflage flying overhead at about 8,000 feet, marked off on the ground maybe a quarter of a mile away from us, was a patch of ground about the size of a football field. Just as Spooky was making its approach, a rabbit, a cute little bunny, was let loose on this football field size, a marked off football field size of ground. The bunny began to run. Spooky let loose his cannon fire. When Spooky was done, the rabbit was done too. Obliterated. There was not an inch of that ground that had not had a bullet hole in it. So when I talk about AC-130U Spooky gunships raking fire and devastation, that's what that thing does. So the commander calls on the AC-130 gunship. Soon, mullahs are preaching jihad from mosques throughout the region, because Spooky had done its evil work. And Afghan army units, long trained by American forces to turn the tide of the war, well, they began to desert. And Taliban fighters then launched a series of remarkably sophisticated strikes aimed at U.S. garrisons across the country, synchronized, sending American casualties soaring. In scenes reminiscent of Saigon in 75, U.S. helicopters rescue American warriors and civilians from rooftops in Kabul and Kandahar. Meanwhile, angry at the endless, decades-long stalemate over Palestine, OPEC leaders impose a new oil embargo on the U.S. to protest its backing of Israel, as well as the killing of untold numbers of Muslim civilians in its ongoing war across the greater Middle East. With gas prices soaring and refineries running dry, due to Obama's ban on drilling here in the United States and his ban on oil exploration in the Gulf of Mexico. So with gas prices soaring, refineries running dry, Washington makes its move, sending in special operations forces to seize oil ports in the Persian Gulf. This, in turn, sparks a rash of suicide attacks and sabotage of pipelines and oil wells as black clouds bellow skyward and diplomats rise at the UN to bitterly denounce American actions. Commemorators worldwide reach back into history to brand this America's Suez. A telling reference to the 1956 debacle that marked the end of the British Empire. What do we have next? Curdles the blood and boggles the mind. Because the last of my four scenarios, yeah, you guessed it. No, no, not the return of the Messiah, not the rapture, but something just as bad or worse, because what we have next is World War III. I'll talk about it. In the summer of 2010, military tensions between the United States and China began to rise in the Western Pacific. We can see that happening right now. Once considered an American lake, even a year earlier, nobody would have predicted such a development. As Washington played upon its alliance with London to appropriate much of Britain's global power after World War II, so China is now using the profits from its export trade with the U.S. to fund what is likely to become a military challenge to America's dominion over the waterways, of Asia and the Pacific. So, with its growing resources, Beijing is claiming a vast maritime arc from Korea all the way to Indonesia, which was long dominated by the U.S. Navy. In August of 2010, Washington expressed a, quote, national interest, end quote, in the South China Sea, and they conducted naval exercises there to reinforce that claim. Well, Beijing's officials responded angrily, of course, saying the U.S.-China wrestling match over the South China Sea issue has raised the stakes in deciding who the real future ruler of the planet will be. That's a direct quote. And so, amid growing tensions, the Pentagon reported that Beijing now holds the capability to attack U.S. aircraft carriers in the Western Pacific and target nuclear forces throughout the continental United States. By developing offensive nuclear, space, and cyber warfare capabilities, China seems determined to vie for dominance of what the Pentagon calls the information spectrum in all dimensions of the modern battle space. So with ongoing development of the powerful Long March V booster rocket, as well as the launch of two satellites in January 2010 and another in July, for a total of five, Beijing signaled that the country was making rapid strides toward an independent network of 35 satellites for global positioning, communications, and reconnaissance capabilities by 2020. Now, this is present day. These are present day events. This is not part of my doomsday scenario for the future, not part of my scenario for 2025, but what's happening today. So, to check China and extend its military position globally, Washington is intent on building a new digital network of air and space robotics, advanced cyber warfare capabilities, and electronic surveillance. Military planners expect this integrated system to envelop the Earth in a cyber grid capable of blinding entire armies on the battlefield or taking out a single terrorist in a field by 2020. And if all goes according to plan, the Pentagon will launch a third-tiered shield of space drones. Oh, yeah. This is all here and happening now. It sounds so futuristic, doesn't it? These are my scenarios. What I have just laid out for you over the course of yesterday's show and partly today is how America will collapse by 2025. It's not good. So while you digest that, I'm going to take a short break, and we're going to see what Barry has to say about all this.
Shut up!
Darkness has descended all across the land. A lone voice in the distance uttered, "Yes, we can." He gave good speeches, never sweat. He was real good at the internet. He's Barack Obama, he's come to save the day. He passed a major stimulus for the bourgeois. They said he had the deficit with me. Kung Fu Chow, the Taliban, ka-chow, ka-chow. Our image in the world, he'll mend and make the Jews an Arab spring. He's Barack Obama, he's come to save the day.
Sir, we've got a situation.
He's Barack Obama. He's come to save the day. YouTube, check it out, y'all. It is hilarious. My goodness. It's so funny. Okay, back to some serious business now. Finally, the first call for impeachment by a member of Congress. Absolutely, Trent Franks tells blog. And he's citing the abandonment of the DOMA law. I'll read it. A Republican congressman has told a left-wing blog that if there is collective support, he would favor impeachment of Barack Obama over his decision to stop defending the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. Scott Keyes of ThinkProgress.org asked U.S. Rep. Trent Franz, Republican Arizona, "I know Newt Gingrich has come out and said that if they don't reverse course here, we ought to be talking about the possibility of impeaching either Attorney General Eric Holder or even President Obama to try to get them to reverse course. Do you think that's something that you would support?" Keyes asked. Franks replied, "If it could gain the collective support, absolutely." He says that, "I called for Eric Holder to repudiate the policy to try terrorists within our civilian courts or resign." So it just seems like they have an uncanny ability to get it wrong on almost all fronts. Keyes was referring to the announcement that Eric Holder and Obama, that they no longer would fulfill their official duties to defend the law of the United States when it comes to the Defense of Marriage Act. So before I go further with this, I'd like to understand something here. If the President of the United States can decide which laws he will enforce and which laws he won't enforce, do we have a president or do we have a ruler? I mean, seriously, I have heard the argument that the question that I have just posed, you know, before. But, you know, really, I'm just not being a parrot here. I'm very serious about it. Do we have a president elected by the people? Or do we have a ruler who is going to arbitrarily decide which laws that he believes are just, which laws that are currently on the books that he believes are lawful, which laws he believes should be enforced and which should be simply ignored? Because as Mary states and Tesla states, and, you know, suppose 2012 comes around, Barack Obama is elected again, and he decides that, well, you know, that whole two-term thing, you know, I just don't believe that that's a just law, that part of the Constitution is enforceable. I think it's he might suggest that it's unrealistic or unreasonable, and decide that, well, he's just not going to go along with that whole two-term thing. He's going to run for a third term and a fourth. And, of course, Eric Holder, being in his pocket, being his boy, and I do mean his boy, he might just go along with the whole thing. Because when Eric Holder, which is a complete embarrassment, who stated yesterday, I think it was, that the whole thing about the Black Panthers standing in front of the polls, brandishing clubs and intimidating folks, well, he shouldn't have to prosecute his people. That to prosecute those folks or call for their prosecution would be some sort of denigration against his people. Who the hell are his people? Black folk? So I guess if one of his people, if he's caught on 79th Street in Indiana or 79th in Halsted in Chicago, and one of his people smashes his ass over the head and grabs his wallet, I guess you don't get prosecuted either, because that's one of his people. I was so embarrassed. My people. My people? Are you kidding me? You know, never. What the? My people? It's my understanding that Eric Holder is supposed to represent all of the American people. In terms of, he's the chief law enforcement officer for the United States of America, not just black folks or his people. To stand up and say that he's not going to enforce the law because he believes it's going against something that involves his people. This tells you all you need to know about President Barack Obama and what his plans are and what his thinking is. How do you put somebody like that in the position? And then, of course, it all comes back to Eric Holder saying that we're not having a conversation about racism, and so now we are essentially a nation of cowards. Why does this guy still have a job? The nation of cowards thing, he should have gotten a stiff rebuke for that, some sort of censure, something. And now with this latest act of stupidity? He's saying that to enforce the law, to prosecute folks standing out in front of a polling place, brandishing clubs, and they were, and intimidating voters as they came and went. Well, that's malicious prosecution. We would be maliciously prosecuting his people. Oh, my God. What is going on? All right. Let's get back to the impeachment deal here. Frank replied, if he could get the collective support, that he'd be for impeachment or calling for impeachment. He went on to state that while sexual orientation carries no visible badge, a growing scientific consensus accepts that sexual orientation is a characteristic that is immutable. I don't really know what that means. Holder explained in a statement announcing the conclusion he reached with Obama. So I guess those two got together, those two brothers got together over a hot dog or, yeah, a frosty, tasty treat out on the soft lawn over a game of basketball. Yeah, I said it. Or after. And decided that, that whole defense of marriage thing, is that crazy or what? Come on, man. Yeah. Come on, man. Are you kidding me? We're not going to do that. No. No. Let's just forget all about that. That's a law we can just do without. That's a law. We don't need to. Oh, come on. Come on, man. My brother. Yeah. And you know what? While we're at it, let's think about some more laws that we, you know, that just seem to be inconvenient. Oh, my God. I can't. You know what? There's things on my mind right now that I don't even want to think about. So I'm not going to say them. I'm certainly not going to say it. Holder said, he's quoted as saying that he and the president believe the law is unconstitutional. Now, so wait a minute. Let me make sure I got this right. Now, no courts involved here. No Supreme Court, no Court of Appeals, no federal judge, no act of Congress, who I believe they make the laws. I mean, I remember Congress makes the laws, don't they? I mean, I could be... somebody correct me if I'm wrong. Congress. They make the laws. I remember Schoolhouse Rock. And Schoolhouse Rock taught me that Congress makes the laws. I'm only a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. Remember that one? And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. And it was a groovy song, and, you know, we followed along. But the president, apparently this president and this attorney general can just get together over a game of basketball and frosty, tasty treats and decide that a law is unconstitutional and therefore they are not going to follow it. Yes, Holder, Black Panther case focus demeans my people. People demean themselves standing in front of a polling place looking all dirty. sweaty, filthy looking, brandishing clubs, unshaven. Look like he's spouting obscenities.
We gonna have our black president. There ain't nothing you can do about it.
Or worse to that effect. The president and I have concluded that classification based on sexual orientation warrant heightened scrutiny, and that as applied to same-sex couples legally married under state law, Section 3 of DOMA is unconstitutional. Isn't that the job of the Supreme Court? Aren't they the ones who are supposed to decide what's constitutional and unconstitutional? So I suppose under this way of thinking, under these policies, if the health care law, Obamacare, reaches the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court strikes it down, Obama and Holder can get together over a game of backgammon or spades, no pun intended, and decide that, well, you know what, we believe that the Supreme Court is unconstitutional, or the Supreme Court's ruling is unconstitutional, so we're not going to follow that. I mean, it just opens up a whole can of serpents. It should be all the people. Exactly. Exactly. Does he only represent black folks? He's supposed to be the attorney general of all the people. Demeans my people? He should be fired. Gone. So the president and I have concluded that the Defense of Marriage Act is unconstitutional. No court now. No court, mind you. Now, Keyes asked, what recourse does Congress have? Could you, for instance, defund the Department of Justice if they don't reverse course and start to enforce the Defense of Marriage Act? Frank responded, that's probably the strongest leverage that we have. In a follow-up question from Keyes, Frank said he would support in a moment a move to defund the agency. You know, something like that, I'm not sure that I would even support that, because at that point, when you decide to do something like that, you're throwing down the gauntlet and you're going to war. That's a war move. And when you make that move, you've got to be thinking two or three moves ahead of that. Because Obama could come along and start issuing all kinds of executive orders and may even try to throw out the whole martial law thing and say, well, since the Department of Justice has been defunded, I'm declaring martial law. And then where do we go from there? So I'm not sure that defunding the Department of Justice would be the best idea, unless you've got some backup plans to go along with that. In a follow-up question from Keyes, Frank said he would support a movement to impeach Obama or to defund the Department of Justice. Wow. Has it come to this? Has it come to this? This guy was supposed to be competent. Talking about Barry Obama. He was supposed to be competent. He was supposed to, wasn't he supposed to bring us all together? Or was that just a bunch of crap? There were no blue states, no red states in the United States of America. Did Eric Holder not get that memo? My people saying we're a nation of cowards, is this how you bring folks together? I submit that President Obama has systematically, with his policies and the choices he's made for the people who represent him and the United States government, he has caused major disruptions, a ripple effect that has spread beyond our shores. I am so convinced that our president is bad news. Bad news. I mean, just a slep rock. He is a global slep rock. Obama is bad luck slep rock. I mean, ever since coming into office, things have gotten worse, not better. You know, I was watching an episode of True Blood. The final four episodes of True Blood the other night, I downloaded them on iTunes. And into the town, the fictional town of Bawtonk, came this beautiful woman who preached love and freedom. And do what you want. Do what you feel. And her influence spread throughout the town. And folks were doing what they wanted. They were doing what they felt. They were free to do whatever they wanted, to think however they wanted. In the remaining episodes, right up until the end, the whole town descended into chaos. People hated each other. There was violence. There was rampant stuff going on, weirdness. The whole town descended into mass chaos and hatred and villainy because of this one person's influence on the town. You know, I see metaphors everywhere. And in that town, in those last remaining episodes of True Blood, I saw what's happening here to our country. We have this one guy who was elected president whose election has seemingly caused the United States of America to go completely nuts. There's no civility. There's no, hey, we can disagree, but we can agree to disagree, but not be disagreeable. The whole country is at each other's throats with this guy at the head of the table. And he's just grinning and laughing and going on vacation and having a good time. He seems completely unfazed by all of the chaos that he has caused as president. And now, worse, it has spread. Spread. A ripple effect, like throwing a pea or a rock into a lake, all over the world. The whole world is on fire and in chaos. And it all started when Barack Hussein Obama was elected president of the United States. Is that a coincidence? We'll ponder that, and we'll talk about it again tomorrow. Thank you all for listening. Jolo, 1, Mary, Mrs. C.R. Jones, 3, Tesla, thank you for listening, and everybody else who downloads the program and listens, thank you. Have a good night, and we'll talk again tomorrow. What do I do now?
we ought to call a halt. So could we start again, please?
Thank you.